This is Kenneth Doust. The show you're about to hear is a rerun from about 4 years ago. So, when I talk about the scoundrels seeking the presidential nominations, just swap a name or two. When I say Herman Cain, just think Ben Carson. How hard could that be? Enjoy! From Darkest Connecticut, welcome to New World Notes, hosted yet again by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. The title of today's installment is Trends. If you care about the latest fashions, about which celebs are hot and which are not, what's in and what's out, if you care about being in on the latest buzz, or better yet, the cause of the latest buzz, if you want to be among those setting the trends, not just playing catch-up, if this is you I'm describing, then of course you're probably not listening to this show, you're doing something else. Probably reading Vanity Fair magazine, or worse, the feature section of your local newspaper. Good riddance! And don't tune in next week either. Bold colors are the latest look in ladies' trousers this season? Drop dead. Okay, generally, New World Notes is not concerned with the latest, hottest trends in anything. Which is one reason we've said not a word about the Republican presidential candidate beauty pageant that's been going on for about a year already. Try to even remember all those once hot names. Can Rick Goodhair Perry maintain his lead over the brown bomber Herman Cain? Can Michelle Bachmann step into Sarah Palin's $1,200 shoes? Who's hotter this week, Donald Trump or Professor Newton Gingrich? Please! As you're leaving the circus, do you care which clown was which? As I'm composing these words in early April, the Republican beauty pageant is still underway. Here is New World Notes' fearless prediction of who will come out on top of the Republican candidate contest. The guy who's a committed imperialist, who will continue bankrupting the country with ever-increasing military expenditures for aggressive wars all over the earth. The guy who will ignore both climate change and energy depletion, who will further reduce taxes on the rich and on corporations, while selling off all public services as rapidly as possible to for-profit businesses. Who will further destroy what remains of constitutional liberties, democracy, and the prosperity of the 99%. That's the Republican nominee. Who will the Democrats nominate? Why, the same guy, of course. Here's an update. After I composed those words, it now looks like one particular person is clearly destined for the Republican nomination, and one for the Democratic, and I correctly picked both candidates. Sheer genius on my part. But seriously, folks, enough gloom and doom, and back to today's hottest trends. We'll have a wide-ranging and quirky show today, yes again. We'll look at trends in housing and suburban design. We'll look at Botox for men. We'll have some whimsy from satirists Paul Krassner and George Carlin, music by David Rovix, and more. I hope you'll stay tuned. Let's start with a new trend I've spotted, getting great wealth and using it to further oppress everyone else. You heard it here first. There's a cute series of character profiles on the web called How the 1% Exploits America. Here's the one on Pete Peterson.
Who's getting rich exploiting the 99%? Meet the worst of the 1%. Pete Peterson, co-founder of the Blackstone Group, wealth $2 billion. Pete Peterson made his fortune during corporate takeovers resulting in layoffs and is now spending $1 billion on a campaign to slash Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Peterson is allocating this money to an echo chamber of think tanks and advocates, giving the Americans the false impression that Social Security will soon be insolvent. In fact, the program has accrued a $3 trillion surplus expected to last for at least 30 years.
Pete Peterson, trendsetter to watch. He'll be bigger than Lady Gaga someday. As Dad used to say, in his Boston accent, mock my words. Hey, for the past 2 weeks, we've been listening to a radio adaptation of an interesting Canadian documentary film called The End of Suburbia. It's about the end of cheap, plentiful oil and cheap, plentiful natural gas, and hence cheap, plentiful electricity. And it's about the changes scarcer, expensive energy will require in our civilization. I use the term civilization loosely. The film was made 8 years ago, and you can see that its predictions for the near term were pretty much spot on. It predicted constant warfare to control oil and natural gas resources. It predicted growing popular discontent and popular protest against the constant wars and occupations. The film predicted increasing government destruction of civil liberties and government crackdown on dissent. And it predicted a decrease in suburban living, indeed the end of suburbia. Pretty good trend spotting, eh? Its prediction about energy wars, popular dissent, crackdowns on popular dissent, and destruction of civil liberties have already proven correct. And it looks like the fourth one is starting to come true, the end of suburbia. But let's be clear about what we mean. The classic suburb is a large bunch of houses, nothing or hardly anything but houses, built on farmland, roughly built all at once, built many miles from the city where all the jobs are. A development reachable these days only by car. I think most of us don't live in a suburb of that classic sort. Here in southern New England, that sort of suburban bedroom development is actually rare. Most people live in towns, towns that became towns a couple hundred years back. All my life, in three different parts of the country, I've lived in a city or I've lived in a town. But let's not get complacent. Our towns are becoming much more like suburbs. The towns are less and less self-sufficient. They have fewer and fewer places to work, fewer and fewer places to shop, very bad or no public transportation, fewer and fewer places to walk to, fewer and fewer places that a sane person could bicycle to. The shops on Main Street are closing one after another. Want to buy something? Hop into your minivan and drive to the mall area at the town's far limits. So this kind of suburb is not just a square mile of little boxes, all built of ticky-tacky, 50 miles east of L.A., that's going to get its butt kicked when highway construction stops and gasoline hits $20 a gallon, and it costs $1,200 a month to heat your three-bedroom suburban ranch house, to say nothing of your brother-in-law's McMansion. So not just in the classic hardcore suburbs, but in fact, I think the vast majority of us are going to be in deep doo-doo in the near future. Speaking of McMansions, what's going to happen to these structures that are going to be too expensive to drive to, too expensive to heat in the winter, too expensive to air condition in the summer, and now worth $100,000 less than the owner paid for it? Here's a prediction by urban designers Peter Calthorpe and James Howard Kunstler.
First-ring suburbs are already becoming the ghettos. They don't have the underlying beauty and structure of our historic cities and towns to kind of rebuild on. So they become quite a challenging situation. But I don't think that's something that might happen. It's something that is happening.
The suburbs that were really built after the 1960s, the ones that are really past the inner rings, are going to become pretty deeply dysfunctional. We may see, you know, more than one family living in a McMansion. and we may see them growing crops on what used to be the front lawn. But I think that they'll basically be the slums of the future.
8 years after those predictions, hot off the press, here's news of what's hot in real estate. It's by AP writer Hope Yen, and it's headlined, U.S. Growth of Distant Suburbs Falls to Historic Low. Washington, stunned by high gasoline costs, outlying suburbs that sprouted in the heady 2000s are now seeing their growth fizzle to historic lows, halting American city dwellers' decades-long exodus to sprawling homes in distant towns. New census estimates as of July 2011 highlight a shift in population trends following an extended housing bust and renewed spike in oil prices. 2 years after the recession technically ended, and despite faint signs of a rebound, Americans are shunning moves at record levels and staying put in big cities. This is posing longer-term consequences for residential exurbs, so-called, on the edge of metropolitan areas. Construction of gleaming new schools and mega malls built in anticipation of a continued population boom is being cut back. Spacious McMansions offering the promise of home ownership to middle-class families sit abandoned or half-built. Once an escape from urban problems, suburban regions hit by foreclosures are posting bigger jumps in poverty than cities. The result? The annual rate of growth in American cities and surrounding urban areas has now surpassed that of exurbs for the first time in at least 20 years, spanning the modern era of sprawling suburban development. The heyday of exurbs may well be behind us, says Yale University economist Robert J. Shiller. Suburban housing prices may not recover in our lifetime, Shiller said, calling the development of suburbs since 1950 unusual and enabled only by the rise of the automobile and the nation's highway system. The signs of longer-term bust are evident in places such as Kendall County, Illinois, an outlying suburb of 116,000 people located about 50 miles southwest of Chicago. This was the nation's number one fastest-growing county from 2000 to 2010. Kendall was part of an ex-urban wave that more than doubled its population. By the late 2000s, however, Kendall County's growth began to wane amid recession and rising gasoline costs. By 2011, its annual growth had slowed to 1%, dropping its county growth rate rank to 236th. So the prediction that sprawling suburbs are not going to be economically viable seems to be now not just a prediction, but a trend that's starting to come to pass.
Were you drinking wine from Argentina or Indonesian coffee? Did you take some in a plane and go fly across the country? Did you go to work the next week, drive your daily 20 miles? Stop at Sears to see the latest Chinese styles. When you did these things, did you wonder how or why? In the years before the oil wells ran dry. Were you watching the news? Did you wonder when they'd bomb another country or start up the draft again? As you tried to stop the war that might decide the planet's fate, did you stop to question how that food got on your plate? As you stuck your fork into that slice of pie in the years before the oil wells ran dry? When you went back to college to get another PhD, or you went into the studio to record one more CD, did it occur to you that your time might be spent better digging in the earth or learning to knit a sweater? Did you prepare for all the changes or at least pretend to try in the years before the oil wells ran dry? When When the cars and planes stopped running, and the dollar hit the floor, and the hordes of hungry children were knocking on your door. When unemployment in the streets said, blame the Arabs for our plight. Did you shot with dirt held high, farmers of the world unite? Did you ride an ox into town, say, join the Green Revolution or die? In the years before the oil wells ran dry.
David Rovix on our special trends show. Let's move on from real estate to beauty and fashion. First, here's a trend that I fearlessly predict will not catch on. It's from my local newspaper, March 15, and the non-starter trend it describes is inspecting power plants while naked. Hey, it's from David Rovick's hometown. Dateline, Norwalk. A superior judge has requested psychological treatment for a woman charged this week with walking naked inside a power plant with her two daughters. The culprit was arraigned Wednesday in Superior Court on charges of risk of injury to minors and trespassing. She was held in lieu of $20,000 bond. Police say the woman was found walking naked inside the Manresa power plant in Norwalk on the night of March 7, with her two daughters, aged 7 and 11. Police say the younger girl was naked and the older girl had only a shirt on. They say both girls were crying and shivering from being cold. Police said the girls are now with their father, who, needless to say, lives in New York. Okay, that trend probably is not going to fly. But catch trend number three. Here's another newspaper item, reprinted from that paragon of journalistic excellence, the Tampa Bay Times. Brotox trends as men become less skeptical. Yes, brothers and sisters, trends is now a verb. Brotox trends as men become less skeptical. I quote, they call it Brotox, slang for Botox treatment for guys. Evan Lobalbo had never heard of the word until his girlfriend suggested they do something to fight the mean signs of aging on their faces. I've popped zits that hurt more than that, he said after the treatment. It wasn't bad at all. Lobalbo is among a growing number of guys getting Botox injections and facial fillers to improve their looks. Men get Brotox, so-called, to look younger and gain confidence. They might be competing for a new job or trying to score a date. Too often, perhaps, people have told them that they look tired. Today's man is evolving, said Dr. Richard Castellano, who administers this treatment. Guys are feeling more comfortable with approving their appearance. They aren't as scared. Last year, more than 300,000 men got Botox, according to figures from the American Society of Plastic Surgeons. That is a 10% increase from the previous year. Like their female counterparts, more men are starting treatments at a younger age. They prefer not to wait for visible signs of aging in their 50s and 60s. They want to prevent them. Lobalbo is 34, and he didn't like what he saw in the mirror. New lines on his forehead and around his eyes. But when his girlfriend Heather Knox recommended that they both try some cosmetic pick-me-ups, he refused. What would his friends think? What would he tell people? A little more prodding, and Lobalbo changed his mind. He wanted to support his 31-year-old girlfriend, and he figured he might like the results. About 2 weeks after the Botox and facial fillers, Lobalbo had no regrets. His girlfriend praised his smoother forehead. No one noticed a big change. A year after starting Botox, Scott Glass, 38, said the differences are subtle, but noticeable enough to come back every 6 months. I'm getting up there in age a little bit, he said. Unfortunately, lines come. I just want to look my best. Okay, another fine bit of journalism from the Tampa Bay Times, featuring a doctor who makes money giving Botox injections and two satisfied male customers who are in their 30s but already worried about no longer looking their best. So, another trend to make note of, if not necessarily to follow, Botox for guys. Now I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Ken, when it comes to spotting trends, you're the man. Not even Faith Popcorn could approach you as a trend spotter. But my local paper doesn't reprint stories from the Tampa Bay Times. What can I do to see what's trending, you ask? First, thank you for the kind words. Now here's some practical advice from the late George Carlin. You recall that Carlin was the genius who, years back, was the first to recognize one of the hottest new trends, homelessness. Now here's Carlin's advice on how to spot all the latest developing trends. Just go to the drugstore or supermarket and look at the magazine rack. If three or four people have started doing something, it'll have its own magazine. Look for new titles. Elbow Piercing Magazine. Best Buddhist Jokes. New England Cockroach Collector. Stuff like that. Let's hear it from the man himself, George Carlin.
We have to declare a war on everything. We have a war on crime, the war on poverty, the war on litter, the war on cancer, the war on drugs. But you ever notice we got no war on homelessness, huh? No war on homelessness. You know why? There's no money in that problem. No money to be made off of the homeless. If you could find a solution, if you could find a solution to homelessness where the corporate swine and the politicians could steal a couple of million dollars each, you'd see the streets of America begin to clear up pretty damn quick. I'll guarantee you that. I will guarantee you that. Yeah. I got an idea. You know what they ought to do? Give the homeless their own magazine. Give them their own magazine. Would make them feel better, for one thing. That's a sure sign of making it in this country. Every group in this country that arrives at a certain level has its own magazine. We have Working Mother Magazine, Black Entrepreneur Magazine, Hispanic Business Magazine. In fact, any activity engaged in by more than four people in this country has got a magazine devoted to it. Skydiving, snowmobiling, backpacking, mountain climbing, bungee jumping, skeet shooting, duck hunting, jerking off, playing pool, shooting someone in the hole with a dart gun. They probably got a magazine for that. Walking! For Christ's sakes, walking! There's actually a magazine called Walking. Look, Dan, the new Walking is out. Here's a good article, putting one foot in front of the other. Give them their own magazine. Give them their own magazine. You know what you call the magazine for the homeless? Better Crates and Cartons. Yeah, then when they get finished reading it, they can use it to line their clothing. That's a good sound business solution, isn't it? That's the kind of answer you get from a conservative American businessman in this country. Say, yeah, let them read it. When they get finished reading it, they can use it to plug up the holes in them piano crates they all seem to like to live in. A good sound, practical, conservative American business solution.
George Carlin, a funny guy and a very astute cultural analyst. He caught on to the war the 1% was waging against the 99% a decade or two before most of us finally noticed. Too bad he didn't live to see Occupy Wall Street. He would have been proud of us. I guess I'm using us a little loosely here, since my backside and the barricades never came into close proximity. I missed Woodstock, too, come to think of it. Speaking of hair, here's an emerging trend from this morning's paper. Natural hair color for women. According to this article, when American women turn 30, 40, 50, their hair starts turning gray, just like men's. Can you believe that? A former corporate executive, Ann Kramer, has written a book titled Going Gray. She's trying to start a trend here, and I say more power to her. But as an expert trend spotter, I'm forced to say, I don't think this one is going to fly, much as I'd like it to. Not in a culture where 30-year-old men are getting Botox injections so they don't look so old. Even Kramer warns women to be cautious in the cutthroat dog-eat-dog world of business. Employers like to fire older workers and replace them with younger ones, who will work longer hours for lower pay. So workers of both sexes, but especially women, engaged in doomed efforts to look younger than they are. Here's a sentence from the story that really stands out. In 1950, 7% of women dyed their hair, Kramer said. Today, it's closer to 95%, or more, depending on geographic location. 95%. After a century of modern feminism, after the Cultural Revolution of the late 60s, we end up here. As though one could not possibly be attractive naturally at age 60 or 50 or 40. The situation would be preposterous even if the treatment worked. But it doesn't work. A 50-year-old woman who dyes her hair does not look like a 25-year-old woman. She looks like a 50-year-old woman with fake hair. I am sorry, but somebody has to point this out. Clairol is not going to, nor is the Tampa Bay Times. The larger question is, what's wrong with looking 50 if you're 50? What's wrong with looking your age? Or acting it, for that matter? One last quote from today's paper. A trend that is catching on is green, eco-friendly, natural products for household cleaning. I'll just pass along one suggestion they make. Stop using harsh, toxic chemicals to clean that bathroom bowl. Instead, pour one can of Coke or Pepsi into your toilet bowl. Let sit 1 hour. This removes most stains, we are assured. I'll just add a final thought. If it does this great a job on porcelain, imagine how clean your insides will look if you drink a can. Well, we're running a little late, so I'll have to skimp on my rival trend spotter, Paul Krassner. But here are just a few items from his article called Save the Economy Tax Tweets, or Predictions for 2012. Vegetarian converts will include Lady Gaga, who will wear a dress made entirely of heirloom tomatoes. Howard Stern will expose himself on America's Got Talent. Square Hitler-style mustaches will finally become stylish after decades of ridicule. Botox will become a soft drink and will get rid of unwanted wrinkles from the inside. Pornography will be allowed in public libraries, but moaning out loud will definitely not be permitted. Arizona, Mississippi, and Tennessee will refuse to recognize leap year. And finally, the Department of Energy will release a report concluding that so-called clean coal is in fact filthy dirty. Thank you, Paul Krassner, and thank you, listener, for catching the trendiest installment ever of New World Notes. Check out our free archive and other neat stuff at our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Your suggestions are appreciated, and you'll find my email address at the website. Once again, that's newworldnotes.blogspot.com. It'll get to my non-carborundum. Remember, gray is the new black. 30 is the new 50. A Botox a day and you'll live forever. And ciao.